This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. I want you to imagine standing on stage in front of an audience. You're singing and you're vibing and you're playing that keyboard like you have done so many times before. And the crowd is really feeling it too. But what nobody knows is that while you're playing, you're also conducting your own therapy exercise with every stroke of your fingers, left to right, left to right. You're working through anxieties. Performer Jess Kramer practices something called eye movement desensitization and reprocessing, or EMDR. It's a tool that people use to process anxiety, and it involves tapping the left and right hands to stimulate the left and right parts of our brains. So when a pandemic forces us to totally reimagine so many things, home space, our creative inspirations, our work, on-stage therapy sometimes has to go through some changes, too. Jess Kramer joins us now to talk more about her creative life and how it's changed since the pandemic. Jess, welcome to Stateside.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
When did you start performing?
I have been performing original music live since I was a senior in high school. So that was 2005. And I have not stopped ever since for more than a few months at a time. So it's been a really consistent thing in my adulthood.
It's been a consistent practice, but has music and performing music for others, has that been for consistent reasons over time? Have you felt in a consistent way about it?
I have. You know, for the most part, I was surprised by how much that connection gave back to me when I started doing it when I was, you know, 17 years old. And I think I almost became addicted to it, right? Of this idea of presenting something so personal in a sharing space with others and getting immediate feedback and seeing if they're reacting. And so for me, it was a way of, yeah, connecting to the people who I may or may not have known with personal stories and sort of, you know, finding that common human ground.
So then, I'm guessing this is a parallel track, but not necessarily that runs in the same direction. How did you realize that you were dealing with anxiety?
I mean, that's the funny thing about performing is that anxiety is expected, right? So the like stage fright and finding ways to just push through it, it's part of the process. And it's like a very rewarding part of the process that I wasn't thinking about it in any personal terms. It was just like, okay, I'm about to get on stage in front of 20 or 400 people. This is a normal feeling. But then to realize that it goes a lot deeper than that. And I think that would mostly come up when I was maybe performing something for the first time or something I had just finished writing or maybe hadn't even totally finished writing yet and I was trying it out in front of a crowd. But that anxiety feeling of like, I'm presenting a whole new idea that I don't know how they're going to react was really when I started to tune into how I personally interacted with this part of creative performance.
I wonder if you could tell us in your own words what eye movement desensitization and reprocessing, what it means.
Yeah, so it's a relatively new therapy for me. I had tried it briefly many years ago and just now revisited it maybe 6 months ago. And the most simplified way that I like to talk about it is it's a way to hold trauma and triggers and train your brain to use physical movements in some way, whether it be eye movement, which is sort of the historical origins of it, or I like to do tapping. Some people will use auditory left and right and have sounds play in headphones, but sort of trick the brain in a way to calm itself down when you're faced with triggers and trauma, and sort of creating these links and tools so that when you go outside of a therapy session and you're faced with something that causes anxiety, you can remember, okay, left and right, sort of rhythmic, and calm yourself down to a place where you can approach it with more logic than trigger.
Well, how does the practice work of it? What is the movement that you do to stimulate the left and then the right side of your brain?
Yeah, so I find that I do better accessing the emotional space you have to come from if my eyes are closed. So the light therapy doesn't work very well for me. So I like to keep my eyes closed, and I literally just sit in a chair, and I have my left and right palms on my knees, and I just very slowly tap left and right in a rhythm. And that way, as we're talking through very difficult things, it sort of feels like walking or like marching. to have this stimulation on your left and right legs.
Right. So these are the motions that you're doing on the keyboard while you're performing, right?
Yeah, very, very much similar. It's maybe a little less rhythmic with my hands when I do keyboard, but when I perform, I'm usually playing a couple of keyboards at like chest level. And then I've also started using a lot of foot pedals, either for like keyboard bass, or I utilize a loop pedal when I'm performing live. So there's actually left and right with hands and feet happening on stage when I play live.
Now, folks in the know who read People magazine may have heard that Prince Harry practices EMDR every time he flies into London. It is gaining a much wider audience as it's becoming a bit more of a topic in therapy and in mental health. But when you first started doing it, had you ever heard of anybody else who was doing this?
I had. I was really lucky to have a small group of friends who are very transparent about what therapies work for them. And so I had had a couple of conversations with trusted folks about how it had helped them calm down these triggers. And so when I was looking for therapists most recently to find a new one during pandemic, I actually did a search based on who was qualified to do EMDR therapy.
Was it very hard to find someone?
There was a pretty decent selection. It was hardest to find people who practiced EMDR and had open availability, because it seems like a lot of people got very busy during the pandemic in therapy offices. So,
oh yeah,
I was able to find I think three people that I reached out to and then narrowed down to my therapist. Yeah,
being on stage is already kind of a balancing act. You're playing and you're singing. Many performers kind of read the audience, like you mentioned, and try to gauge their reaction, maybe even interact a little bit. Hopefully also you're getting into your own groove while you're up there. Was it difficult to develop this skill and to think about moving your hands in that way in addition to everything else that was going on?
You know, I think the movement came really naturally for me. And the link here is it's very normal for me to sort of have to do a consistent physical movement whether I'm accessing trauma moments in therapy or whether I'm singing about something really difficult that I went through. I'm used to holding like sort of a mathematical consistency with my movements while I access big emotions. What was different for me that I actually found kind of jarring was when you're doing it in front of an audience, there's this expectation that you're kind of holding it together, mm-hmm. right? That you're like, you are staying on stage. You are staying composed enough to be singing, because singing is hard to do if you're crying. And that was a really big shift for me in therapy. It's like, there's no one watching this. I think that was such a moment of creative shift for me. It's like, what is the value for me in accessing these vulnerable moments with no one watching, or maybe one person watching, you know, with a therapist? But there's a different sort of expectation of holding it together that felt really different, even if the movements and the feelings were really similar.
Yeah. Jess, can you describe what the effect feels like when EMDR is practiced properly, when you're on stage and you're doing this? I mean, how does it feel?
Well, I think there is a difference. There's a difference between EMDR-like performance and the feeling that comes after, because you're literally met with applause, right? There's a sort of high when you do it successfully. But for me, in an EMDR session, it feels very much like you've peeled back a lot of layers and you're very raw. And so I think I'm still accessing a similar part of myself. And maybe that's the difference between doing it in front of an audience and doing it privately, right? Is that there's an expectation of sort of like a triumphant applause at the end of one, and at the other you're like in your house closing your laptop.
If you're just joining us, my guest today is Jess Kramer. She's a musician who lives in Grand Rapids. And like so many other Michigan musicians, she's had to put the pause on performing this year. Unlike a lot of other musicians, though, this has also meant a pause on a form of therapy that she practices on stage. Jess, I know you have an 11-year-old son, and parents the world over have been making do with the wild lifestyle changes that everybody's been dealing with during COVID. Can you talk a little bit about what it's been like for your family?
Yeah, you know, in a lot of ways, we were really, really lucky last March when the schools shut down, and suddenly we were trying to figure out working from home and not sending my son off to school. We were very lucky. I co-parent with two other households. So my son, I guess the easiest way is sort of a relay race. I'm a single parent that splits time three ways. And he was able to stay home with someone at every household so he could maintain his same schedule. But for all of us, it was like, okay, well, when he's in school, we're also working, we're juggling, checking in on him, making sure that we can keep our work going. And it was suddenly just everything was based in the same space, you know, making music, me working my day job, his schooling was all in the same home. And we didn't get breaks from each other in the same way that we were used to, which, I mean, I really loved personally. I love being home with my son and can be sort of a homebody in that way. But it does affect your natural rhythm that you've gotten used to with social life and even just, you know, had to update my internet speed because suddenly we have all of these devices. Our education and our work are relying on being able to simultaneously do all of these things from home.
Yeah. We frequently talk to people who say they've had trouble just finishing reading a book during the pandemic. Did you have much of a creative process over the past year or so?
You know, it's interesting. I've really struggled to create anything new. What I have been able to do pretty well is revisit old things that weren't finished, sort of like reusing leftovers. So I've been working on a lot of unfinished songs from years back, and I haven't honestly written anything that I would consider a full song, but suddenly had this energy to sort of go back and revisit old things. That was strange. I released a new song about a year ago, June of 2020, but I had been writing it for a while. I had started writing it pre-pandemic and was just able to finish and release it while everything was locked down.
Is that the song that you put out to celebrate Pride last year?
Yeah, I did. It was sort of a coincidental release. It was a love song that I wrote, so it was a gay love song, and thought that June was an apt time to put it out into the world. But that was also just when I felt like it was ready to share.
Yeah. Could you tell us a little bit about the writing it and, I guess, the finishing of it?
Yeah, I started writing that song probably 2 years before it actually came out. And I had performed it live a couple of times, tried out a couple of different versions. And it always felt really incomplete. And I think part of that is that the song is written about someone that I dated that it sort of left off without any closure. And I was really grappling with like how you can hold love and affection, admiration for someone and just not be able to explain why it didn't work. And so I think it was a struggle because a lot of times I use songwriting to write an ending to a feeling or to something that I went through, right? Sort of this zoom out of being able to make sense of something that I went through. And with this one, I couldn't find the part where it made sense. And so I was mirroring that very much in the songwriting process and in the production of it. And I couldn't find a way to end the song in a way that felt right. And it finally, I tried all of these things to add some closure to it and ended up with the fact that there wouldn't be closure. And that sometimes that's the most honest way to talk about a thing is just to be like, I don't know what happened. Here's a song about it. So I decided just to finish it as it was, to finish the production and put it out into the world and to sort of let it be a loose end as a song.
The finished product is called Shake It. Let's take a listen.
Your presence is a blanket.
Jess, you just told us that you haven't really composed anything new in the past year. You've mostly just been working on things that you had already started writing, sometimes maybe years ago. But is there anything else creative that you're doing that's sort of been getting you through this time?
You know, it's funny. I think that creative energy's gotten sucked up so much. A lot of where my brain has gone is sort of the mathematical side of it, which my music is still pretty mathematical. When you're building things with a loop pedal, you know, it's very much in patterns and order and timing. But I feel like so much of my creative energy has just had to go to everyday things. What a creative reimagining of what work looks like, and a creative reimagining of what parenting looks like, and reimagining what friendships look like when you can't be in the same place. And so no, that creative generation has really just, it's been on pause in a musical sense. You know, there have been little ways that I've been able to do like live stream concerts for fans and perform. And I've, you know, recorded a couple of covers of other people's songs, some of which I did collaboratively and some of which I did solo. So it's been important for me to still make music, but to actually create new content, it feels like that well's been really dry. And it's been a real practice in patience to just sit with that as like the current reality as a musician, just to know that it's not there right now. So how else can I keep at least, you know, picking up my instruments and finding joy in a creative process that looks a little bit different?
Mm-hmm. We're coming up on the date when Michigan is going to reopen capacity at venues, and there are starting to be rumblings about small gatherings and even shows. I know we spent the first part of this interview talking about this intimate and personal experience that you have during performance. Now I'm wondering, are you feeling like you might be ready to get back up on a stage?
Mm. I was actually really comforted by the idea of smaller capacity shows, because I love that connection with a smaller room of people. And I love the idea of coming back from not having live shows for so long and sort of sharing that appreciation for that moment. I currently have decided only to perform outdoor shows. And the reason for that is my son is 11 and he's still not eligible for the vaccine. So as far as risk management, I feel like outdoor is a space that I feel safe, and I'm really excited to connect by doing some outdoor performances. But, you know, down the road, if he is eligible for a vaccination, I think I'm ready to go back to an indoor venue. I think it's going to be really, it's going to be kind of terrifying to go back into that space that was so comforting for so long, and to be like, oh, right, this is relearning how to perform in front of a crowd, and how, you know, to show up as a person that's just been through a year and a half of processing all of these things alone, and like dipping back into sharing it with a room of people. I'm really not sure how it's going to feel, but I hope I can get back to it in the next couple of months.
You figure out what it means all over again.
I think so, and I think that's the beauty of it, to come back as somebody slightly different.
Well, for now, we'll just say Jess Kramer's music can be found and experienced on Spotify and also on Bandcamp. And if you're looking for information on EMDR, there's information about that available online as well. Jess, it's been really nice talking to you. Thank you for sharing your story with us.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
And that's Stateside for today. I'm April Baer. Thank you so much for listening. We'll see you next time.